The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
The Taoiseach has said he wants to see a COVID inquiry plan published and officials appointed to the inquiry before the Dáil returns in September. So it's all taking off. But whatever the plan begins to take shape, whatever it might look like, the big question is, how should we do it? What should the learnings be? All kinds of questions will come up. And joining me now to discuss this very important topic is Professor Cliona O'Farrelly, who is the Chair in Comparative Immunology in the School of Biochemistry and Immunology, one of my colleagues. You're very welcome, Cliona. And Nessa Fee. Now, Nessa is Junior Counsel who is involved in the UK COVID inquiry with some of the departments in Northern Ireland, a very important role there. We're going to have a good chat now about the impending inquiry. Nessa, I'll start with you, actually. So you're actually involved in the UK inquiry. So your opinion is really valuable to us here in Dublin.
Thanks very much for having me on, Luke. And yes, I have been representing some of the departments in the Northern Ireland government. My most significant department was the Executive Office of Northern Ireland. So Northern Ireland has a very particular governmental arrangement, thanks to the Good Friday Agreement. There are 9 government departments and they're all each individual legal entity. So that means they all have their own separate representation. The Executive Office was one of the biggest players during the COVID pandemic. And that was one of my key clients. I also represented the Department for Agriculture, Environment and Rural Affairs, Department for Infrastructure. And Sue Gray, actually, from the Department of Finance, who was a witness in the Belfast module there in May.
Right. But it sounds like a big job. What exactly are you doing?
Well, I'm working round the clock for the last 2 years, basically. When you're a core participant to an inquiry like this, you have a duty to provide disclosure to the inquiry of all your relevant documentation. So for government departments who have been working in the COVID response, that means tens of thousands of documents that have to be sifted through for relevance, provided to the inquiry and then provided back to other core participants. You're also giving witness statements, so telling the inquiry what you did for the duration of the pandemic and before and after in witness statements, and then going to the inquiry and giving evidence.
Right, yes. It sounds like a full-time job, effectively.
A huge job.
And it's going to go on for years, is that
years,
right? So the first module has been published, right? But there's, at least we get the first signs of it, don't we? And now there's going to be lots more. It's going to go on for 6 years, apparently, is that right?
At least, I'd say the first module has published its report on Thursday. We're 2 years in. There are 13 modules. They won't always be as big as the first and second module, but there are some key modules coming up, like vaccines and therapeutics, which will be a huge one, and procurement, which will be probably a very controversial module, the care sector, which will be obviously probably a heartbreaking module, and then all the other ones that flow from those still have to come.
And it's been chaired by Baroness Heather Hallett, and apparently she's extremely effective. Is that right? I mean, she seems to be someone who doesn't pull her punches.
She is a fantastic chairperson. Seeing her in action is just, it's so impressive. She is chairing this mammoth inquiry, and she is getting it done on time, getting her report out, getting everyone to do their bits in the timeline that they're supposed to. So it's a huge job that she's doing. Right. Very impressive.
Cliona, one thing that strikes me is there's a wonderful opportunity here to compare Northern Ireland to the Republic, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Because scientifically, I'm thinking anyway, because we've got the same genetics, hopefully, kind of.
Exactly.
Same kind of culture, all that kind of thing. And I bet it's going to be damning, is it? I mean,
out of these reports, the very apparent differences will emerge about how things were handled. But certainly for informing the future, we have to be thinking about all island approaches. I got into trouble for suggesting that at the beginning of the last pandemic. I tweeted it because I said the Departments of Agriculture were...
The last pandemic. Crikey, you're like predicting the next one already.
I know. People will be really depressed. But you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
This is going to be hugely valuable going
forward. Isn't it?
Yeah.
And especially, I think, in terms of the different responses and so on, and what worked and what didn't.
It didn't work, exactly.
And it has to be an all-Ireland thing, doesn't
it? Ultimately, it has to. And by comparing and seeing...
Just for scientific reasons.
But it strikes me that one of the first things that we have to do is clone the Baroness.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, I mean, she has looked at that north-south arrangement already.
Can we make it a module among all the modules?
Well,
something.
I mean, that's what I was going to suggest. A key feature of the Southern Inquiry should be that North-South cooperation and engagement. Obviously, this pandemic happened at the worst possible time in Northern Ireland. We had no ministers for 3 years. Brexit had, you know, eaten up all our resources. Civil service staff were completely focused on Brexit.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
So we weren't prepared at all.
Yeah. Now, it strikes me, and looking at the report that's come out, I mean, it's shocking reading. Well, I've read it closely, obviously. And all kinds of phrases like, you know, they were preparing for the wrong pandemic is one issue, isn't it, for a start?
Exactly.
They thought
yeah.
it was going to be influenza. That's one thing that came out. But getting back to that thing, I mean, they seem to be distracted with Brexit. Is that right?
And I don't really think it's going to be as big a feature of the UK reporting because, obviously, you know, they created Brexit. So, but I think it's a feature that the South, it will feature in the Southern Inquiry as well too. Brexit disrupted the entire system of government in Northern Ireland. One of my clients, the Department for Agriculture, the amount of work that they were putting into the cross-border requirements that were coming out of Brexit, it just meant that nobody had capacity to do the normal civil contingencies planning that should be going on all the time. So before Brexit, there was a pan-flu readiness board established. Governments war game or exercise these outbreaks to make sure that they're actually ready when it hits. The pan-flu readiness board was supposed to be set up and preparing for a flu outbreak. That work was paused because of Brexit. So not only were they looking at a flu outbreak, the work didn't actually take place to prepare us for a flu outbreak.
And Clean, I noticed the health inequalities came up as an issue in the UK one because there's massive inequality in the healthcare system. And the ones who suffered most, actually, were in underprivileged areas. It'll be the same.
It'll be exactly
the
same.
Here, won't it?
I think it's hugely valuable that the UK inquiry has got so much momentum already. I think we can learn an awful lot from that. But there will be Irish specific scenes. And so we do need to be able to include those in some ways. But the that differential of socioeconomic, the effects of socioeconomic, again, we all know it, yeah. but we haven't actually documented it properly and fully and embedded it in our healthcare provisions. So this is going to be a really fantastic opportunity for that. We saw how everything was just much worse for poor people.
Right.
They got sicker, they got more sick, they had less money. The way they the living conditions made it all more difficult. And that's for every disease, not just infectious
disease.
This,
obviously.
Exactly.
Yeah. And something else you've spoken about is health identifiers, that we don't have that at all, do we?
Well, at last.
But the North has that, has it? I presume there's a health identifier thing. In other words, you can track each patient.
Yes,
very easily, whereas we don't have that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously from Northern Ireland. Yeah. I'm from Enniskillen, but I live in Dublin, and I see the difference in the health systems. We went digital in 2004, I think. And yes, I have a hospital number, and anybody can access my notes and records. It doesn't happen down here. How could you possibly prepare in a situation where you don't have somebody's health information available to you?
Exactly, yes. So, and in spite of that, it still was probably worse than the North overall. That didn't necessarily help.
It didn't necessarily help. I think also in terms of health inequalities, the amount of vulnerable people who weren't taken into account in the planning is going to be a key outcome from the UK inquiry. Disabled people's organisations, women who were living in violent situations. Those all have been a key focus of the UK inquiry, that they need to be considered and built into any planning that takes place to react to a contingency.
And one issue is the adversarial risk, right? Now they're saying it wasn't that adversarial, even though names were named and Matt Hancock was kind of...
I mean,
about a lot in the report, but it wasn't that adversarial, was it?
Not at all. I mean, I was there. I was, you know, at the inquiry and heard that evidence. Some of it did descend into, to, you know, perhaps farce a little at time and took away from the seriousness of what was an issue. But I don't think, you know, those are headlines. That was a tiny percentage of the huge work that has been going on, that has, you know, done such valuable work that you can see in that Module 1 report. The kind of WhatsApp headlines, you know, it did detract a little bit, but it definitely isn't the adversarial type inquiry that it's being labelled as.
And that's very important for us, Lena,
absolutely.
That we shouldn't. And the Taoiseach has said this, by the way.
Yeah, and I think
it shouldn't be adversarial. It should be helpful. It should help us, you know, prepare for the next one.
Exactly. And we should be looking for the data to tell us what did we do well, what do we need to do better the next time, and where can we learn from others.
Right.
Let the data speak. And so if it's set up well and we modelled on other inquiries that are working well, and in particular being chaired by someone like the Baroness.
That's my next question, Lena. I hate to put you on the spot. Who would you put on this panel? Now, obviously what the Taoiseach wants is who's doing it, basically.
Yes.
Who's going
yes,
to chair it?
Yes.
What'll the makeup be? Have you any advice on well, Nessa should be on for a start.
Yes, I think it would be a mistake to name names on air.
I think it would. Yes. But I think it should be external.
Certainly the chair. Well,
not all of them, obviously.
Yes,
but
exactly.
The chair should be external, outside Ireland.
And for each of the modules, there should be an external. So they're probably, another good model was the one that Harney set up that ultimately led to Science Foundation Ireland. You know, that one from before, where you had different groups and chairs by external. I think that something
definitely
like that. Yes, so we have to look at industry. We have to look at health. It's just like procurement. We have to look at... a thing that we really didn't suffer the lack of was a Council of Ethics. We had shot ourselves in the foot by disbanding the Council of Bioethics, something like it was 10 years before the pandemic.
Yeah.
So there was no independent group to provide advice on how you come to these decisions. It's one thing. The other thing we were hugely lacking was a scientific advisor. I mean, Mark, we all know how wonderfully Mark Ferguson helped behind the scenes. But as far as the public was concerned, there was no visible scientific advisor advising the government.
Yeah, it was strange that, I mean, you and I were in the thick of this ourselves. So
exactly,
we got to be a little careful, but that was something that was missing here.
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely.
But having said that, I know you said this to me, there's not quite cause for celebration here, but Ireland, it looks we didn't do that badly, did we? What do you think?
Again, that's what it looks like, and this is again is why you'd really
need
love
the
to
data,
see the data.
And especially north versus south, that'll help us
that'll
say
help
if
us
that's
a lot
true or not.
But I think one of the key readouts is the uptake in the vaccination rates. And we know that that has been really good. And you'll know that I'm always singing the praises of our science teachers. We have at both primary and secondary level, we actually have wonderful science teachers. So I think there's a lot of scientific and interest in science. And the other group who I think deserve congratulations and again should be part of the module would be our journalists. Our public communication was really excellent and allowed people like Luke
like ourselves
all
yes
the time.
I have to agree
not
with
just
that
me. You clearly were there.
We got such powerful information from people like yourselves throughout the pandemic.
Was that not the case in the north? I know there was
a couple
of people.
We also don't have a chief scientific advisor in Northern Ireland either. We were heavily reliant on SAGE, which is, you know, the advisory group in. Oftentimes the information didn't come effectively to Northern Ireland, and obviously with our particular difficulties, the sharing of information proved quite, you know, problematic at times as well too. But yeah, we as a public got such, you know, powerful information from people like yourselves. I think that's a really vital thing, that the same should come from government. We need to find out what were the government doing. You were telling us what the scientists were doing, mm-hmm, you know, who was preparing for the vaccine, all that kind of thing. What were the government officials doing?
Yeah.
What were they preparing for, and how will they do it again?
But of course, a big issue with Stormont wasn't sitting, right? I mean,
yeah,
that must have had a hugely negative effect, I presume.
Terrible. I mean, really terrible. We had a report in 2016 about how to improve our health system in Northern Ireland. And that just sat on the desk for 3 years whilst we had no ministers. Our ministers came back in January 2020 and then COVID hit. So our health system is on its knees. You'll have seen the strikes in Northern Ireland because we are so far behind even, you know, the health system in the UK, which isn't operating effectively either.
Mm.
There were huge missed opportunities in Northern Ireland because of our lack of government.
And I presume a key thing for all of us would be to think about the victims and the people who died.
Yeah.
And they need, I wouldn't call it justice necessarily, but especially in the UK, it seems.
Well,
there's a very strong lobby there, isn't there, from the relatives of people, and their voice needs to be heard, and they want answers, don't they? I mean, so it's a bit more fraught. Is it a bit more fraught?
I wouldn't say it's, well,
here,
I mean, it's very emotive. Yep. I think I would ask everyone to watch the impact films that the chair has commissioned for each of the modules, and to bring people back to what this is about. It's about finding out answers for people who did lose loved ones, who, you know, lived in terrible situations, who really are probably still affected by the pandemic. And this inquiry that will happen in the South, the same as the UK one, should give people the kind of information that they need to move on and get justice. And we've seen in, you know, situations like the Stardust inquest, where people get real satisfaction from having answers, you know, to something that has gone wrong.
Yep.
you know, it's very effective.
It's tricky, clean, isn't it? Do you make this a public thing, or do you allow the media in? Those are the questions, I guess, that are going to be examined, and the terms of reference are going to be described. Exactly. What do you think on that?
There has to be an element of community transparency.
Yeah, it has to be transparent.
It has to be transparent, so people have confidence that it's an inquiry that's going to give answers, exactly as you say, and that the key target audience are the people whose interests are, just as you said, are reflected. They must be reflected in each.
Yeah, there's two groups, I think. One of the relatives of people who died, they need to be taken care of, really importantly. Yeah. And secondly, the experts, as you dreaded, as it may seem, the risk of the next pandemic. What can we do to make sure this doesn't happen again?
Exactly.
Have we got the capacity to do
that? Well, that's the problem. And listening to the expense of this, because we also have to think about mental health, the effect on the morale of the health services. They've all been compacted. Different industries were really affected. And so how can we do that different and better?
What strikes me is, and we discussed this before, every aspect of society was affected by this.
We're still seeing it in the university.
And I remember vividly, within the first couple of months, everything from birth to death was affected by this. You couldn't go into a hospital with your wife to watch her giving birth. Exactly. You couldn't go to the funeral of a loved one.
Exactly.
And everything in between. It's the most remarkable.
Exactly.
We know this, obviously, has happened.
Yes.
And I presume that's why all these modules are there, Ness. That's
why it's so huge, because every single walk of government was affected as well too. So I think the inquiry is really important, because it's looking at every single aspect of how a government prepares a nation to respond to a pandemic that is going to happen. I mean, the chair is so determined to get her reports out in time, because she understands there's going to be another pandemic happening in our lifetime. You know,
there was an amazing statement I read during this. When this was released, the first module, one expert said that it was the biggest crisis since World War II to hit the UK, and our defences were down because of severe spending cuts.
So in other words, it's
a bit like there's a war coming and we're not going to invest in our army, basically.
Exactly.
So the question now becomes, how do we invest in our armies now?
Well, that's one of the recommendations that she has made, is that there has to be a dedicated minister and branch of government that's always preparing for contingencies, whatever they may be, you know, and that there's dedicated resources that must, you know, a percentage of your GDP must be spent on.
I think she wants every 3 years to have a big exercise.
An exercise.
As if a pandemic is happening.
Yeah. But
it
shouldn't be only for pandemics. You see, that's what the technology foresight that Harney did all those years ago was so important. There'd be other crises that require combined scientific, health and digital input to solve, that might not necessarily be biological.
I think you're right. I think you're talking about maybe the housing crisis at the moment.
Exactly.
That brings in all different strands of life. You know, you've got people's health, people's housing, people's mental health, that's all brought in. It's, you know, on top of then the war in Ukraine. If a pandemic happens in this situation.
Exactly. But are the digital, I'm talking about big crisis, the digital breakdown that happened. So we should have groups, that should be, I think, is one of the recommendations that's coming out. We should have expert groups ready to go. And this is one of the things that really came out during the pandemic, was the huge connectivity that the academics had. You know, that there were people in touch. And that's one thing we really should celebrate, was the science that came out of the UK. And this is where you and I were so lucky to be so well connected with the UK scientists.
And I would say that in terms of the scientific evidence that's been given in the UK inquiry, that surely should be lent on for the Southern inquiry. The work has been done. Well, the evidence is there. We're the same, you know, we're from the same island.
The irony to us, Nessa, I was looking at this, we have loads of collaborators in the UK, and Pete Openshaw is a very famous scientist. He was very much involved in this. And I met him early on, and he was saying, we've got the best scientists in Europe, and they have in the UK. Fantastic research, the great immunology. And look what happened. It was almost as if they weren't being listened to, or there was some disconnect between the two. It's alarming at that level.
Yeah, I have to agree. They weren't being listened to at times. There were political decisions being made, perhaps. Yeah. There were decisions being made for not the right reasons, perhaps, at times. So,
are you hopeful, Nessa? Obviously you are, because in the sense that this stuff is damning at the moment. But it's a bit like the climate change, the IPCC reports.
Yeah.
We're hoping, but it's 6 years seems like an awful long time to me.
But I think the important thing is that the reports are coming out at the end of each module. We're not waiting 10 years to get the last report.
Right.
We are finding out what to do about decision making, what our committees should look like, what the structure should be before we move on to the next one, which will be healthcare, which will then be vaccines. So she's giving us our reports, you know, at the end of each module, which is very important.
So, Cliona, I presume you're hopeful about what's going to happen next here, but we've got to be careful.
We certainly don't have a lot of money. Yeah. And so the exercise that NASA's describing is just massive and hugely expensive. So the initial scoping exercise for our inquiry is going to be really important.
Yeah, to get it right, basically.
Exactly. And then to identify the chair and then to identify the key people.
Right, and it's all going to be happening in the next few months. I mean, the Tarnish has got the bit between his teeth on this one, hasn't he?
Yes, obviously. He has, yes.
Because it has been dragging on a bit, hasn't
it? Yes, it's been interesting as to why it has been. Yes.
Exactly. Well, let's hope they pick the right chair first and foremost and then get the terms of reference correct as well. Thank you both very much for that very important topic. That was Professor Clín O'Farrelly, who's the Chair in Comparative Immunology in the School of Biochemistry and Immunology in Trinity, and Nessa Fee, Junior Counsel, who is directly involved in the UK COVID inquiry for some of the departments of Northern Ireland.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.